And first up, let's open a work session on House Bill 3696. Cindy, Jay, you guys want to come up? Everybody? Introduce it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cindy Finlayson. I represent Portland General Electric. With me today is Jay Dudley, our attorney for Portland General Electric, and Mark Hellman with the Public Utilities Commission. We're here today on House Bill 3696, which was and currently is a former PGE bill, and then it was a repeal bill, and now it is hopefully we have amendments, dash 8 amendments, that would allow a utility to have an alternative form of regulation, expand the statute under alternative form of regulation, and to include new power generation facilities and new purchase power contracts. Jay Dudley will kind of go through the differences between current regulation, what's currently in statute, and then what we're proposing.
Jay, you want to briefly go through them section by section? Can I stretch forward briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Jay Dudley of Portland General Electric Company. Section 2 of dash 8 of 3696 is the substantive provisions of this act. It creates a new resource rate plan which allows a utility to make a proposal on how to treat new resources, and these could be generating facilities or contracts that have never previously been in rates, and allows to propose how they should be treated, how they should be put into rates, and has a process by which there will be a hearing. All parties can participate in that hearing, and the commission ultimately decides whether to adopt the plan or not. Another important provision here is that once the plan is adopted, without the utility's consent, the commission may not vacate or amend its order on that plan.
Can I ask a question?
Representative Lowe.
Thank you. Would you translate that for me into something that I can understand? For example, how would that relate to, is that like stranded costs in the Trojan scenario, or how would this work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lowe, I think a more realistic example might be, I'll give you two. Utility may decide that it wants to build a 100-megawatt power plants, but yet the costs and risks of doing that are quite high in this environment. It would make a proposal for how to do that and how it would be put online and how it would be rolled through rates to ratepayers. It would put that into the plan. It would bring it to the commission. The commission would look at it and approve it or disapprove it. Along the way, all the parties would have a chance to participate in that discussion, even negotiate with the utility for a different way than the original proposed plan, and it'd be up to the commission to decide whether to accept it or not. Once it was accepted, the decision for how to price it, how to put it in rates, would be
binding,
correct, and not disturbed by a future commission.
May I follow? Just so I can understand. But presently, utility companies don't build power plants, correct? I may not know. I know I'm saying this wrong. Presently, you don't pass the cost of a power plant on through rate. Is that correct?
Representative,
how does it work now?
Representative Lowe, the way it works now is that if a utility decides to build a plant, and there hasn't been any new plant construction that I'm aware of for at least for Portland General for quite a while. The last one we built was in was Kylie Springs, I believe, in 1995. The utility takes all the risks for all the development and construction of the costs. Only when it goes into commercial operations do they have a chance to put it into rate base and then for to be considered in rates on an ongoing basis. But even those decisions are can be revisited by the commission, and there is ongoing risk for the operation of those plants in terms of cost recovery and capital recovery for those plants.
Next question. Supposing we do this and the rate and the power that is generated is sold out of state or sold to somebody else, does this bill allow for recovery of or a proportionate recovery of the costs of building the plant in the first place to those non-Oregon ratepayers or to the non-Oregon customers, or are the Oregon people going to have to eat the cost of this even though the benefit might accrue to somebody else?
Chairman Hill, Representative Lowe, no, the...
I realize I'm asking extremely simple questions.
Well, the... no, it's a very good question. The... that very issue would be addressed in the resource rate plan. That would be the first question I'd expect that Mr. Hellman here to my left would ask a utility when they made a proposal for a generating plant of what's going to happen if this power is sold out of state and what benefits will be made to the Oregon ratepayers. And I know we're going to have to satisfy him, give him a satisfactory answer and give the commission a satisfactory answer, or they simply won't approve the plan. I think there's some various alternatives that could be proposed. I think one proposal could be that all of the power is used in-state by Oregon ratepayers. Another proposal that could be put forward is part of the power is sold out of state, but the margins from those sales could be, in whole or part, credited back to Oregon ratepayers. Those would be the kind of things that would be addressed in this plan that would be up for the commission's consideration.
Thank you. In the event of a contest over power supplies, is there anything in this bill that allows more favorable treatment or status to Oregon consumers?
Chairman Hill, Representative Lowe, again, that's another issue that would be part of the proposal. I think it's explicitly stated that the commission's order... and this is section 2, sub 3A on page 2. The commission order must address the extent to which the public utility will use power from the generating plant or from the power purchase or sales agreement to serve its retail customers in Oregon. That explicitly has to be considered as part of this process.
So I am assuming that what you're really telling me is that Oregon consumers... at the household level and also Oregon consumers at the business level are going to have some preferential treatment under this. They are going to have some protection that they might not otherwise have by permitting these plants to be built and the cost thereof to be passed along to ratepayers.
Chairman Hill, Representative Lowe, I will say that they definitely will be a benefit to the Oregon ratepayers under this proposal because it gives another option for the development of these generating resources by utilities that don't exist today.
Thank you.
Mark Hellman of the Public Utility Commission. The Public Utility Commission supports the -8 amendments to House Bill 3696. It removes all the original language that the commission imposed and in its place provides for an alternative treatment for new generating resources and wholesale power purchase and sales agreements. One of the impediments to new supply is regulatory risk perceived by the electric companies of entering into long-term power purchase agreements or construction of new resources. And I think that's especially the case as we try and work through implementation or timing of implementation of 1149 and which customers have choice and which customers don't. And so I think that this legislation, DAS 8-3696, provides a new tool that will help to reduce risk to both the company and to customers. And there's two potential win-win examples for a new resource rate plan. One is that it would allow for a resource rate plan to reflect options to buy or sell power, which are a prudent risk hedge, but and may not ever be exercised. However, the company might feel that without a resource rate plan, that maybe some kinds of buy or sell options, they're not sure about cost recovery and might be leery of entering into them. Another example is guaranteeing a resource rate plan could guarantee that the siting cost of a new resource would be recovered in rates, and in exchange for that, there would be favorable pricing and access to the power. So there's new kinds of agreements and business relationships that can occur between the commission and the electric company that aren't currently possible given our current statutes. And as an additional tool and the protections afforded by our existing alternative form of regulation statutes, that this is a good bill. The bill also contains transmission-related amendments that are good and useful because it anticipates the coming of transmission companies that help to create a open and competitive wholesale market.
May I ask another question, please?
Representative Lowe.
At page 3, paragraph number 4, beginning at line 2, it says, if the commission approves the resource rate plan, the commission may not thereafter review the rates charged by the utility under the plan except for the purposes of determining whether or not they're in conformity therewith. The commission may not consider any complaint under 756-500 relating to the utility's rates except for those relating to whether the rates are in conformity with the resource rate plan. The 756-500, are those the consumer protection? What are those?
500, I think, is a general opening of investigations by the commission. So it is a complaint statute. So who files complaints?
Yeah. Is it? I guess my question is this: is it unusual for the commission to surrender this kind of ability to control rates in a fluid, in a fluid or emergency situation? That is not something that exists presently, is it?
Chair Representative Lowe, the purpose of this language is to make it clear that the commission has authority to ensure that the agreement that is reached between the company and the commission is carried out. The commission can't unilaterally change the terms of that agreement, and so that's what this language is getting at. And by doing that, that helps to reduce the business risk that the either the company or also customers may perceive in entering into an agreement on a new generating resource.
But my question is specifically, does this abrogate power that you presently have to change rates in the face of some change in the energy environment? Or is this what is currently the status quo?
No, this is not status quo. This is a change. That's not to say that in a resource rate plan that there can be, I can't remember the name of the clauses, but clauses that say, okay, if there's a tremendous structural change in the industry or some national a natural event took place that would allow for the agreement to be null and void or have to renegotiate terms. So those kinds of things can be included in the agreements to take into account unforeseen circumstances that folks just didn't contemplate when they entered into the agreement.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
I'm satisfied.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Gary Conkling, representing the industrial customers for Northwest Utilities. Mr. Chairman, let me preface my comments today that I appreciate your tolerance and indulgence to allow an extra day or two for discussions to occur. They have occurred between representatives of ICNU and the Public Utility Commission and PGE. I think that they will reach a constructive end, but not by the time when you would like to pass this bill today. We have a conceptual agreement, and want to mostly note that we are going to continue to work on it and hopefully can apply that particular idea in the Senate when this legislation is occurring there. So we appreciate the time that you've given us and the opportunity, and we are moving ahead with it.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on 3696 that has not had an opportunity? I'm seeing none. Representative Patridge?
Mr. Chair, as much as I'm tempted to ask for a conceptual amendment and send it with these dash 8 amendments to the floor, I will move the dash A8 amendments.
Representative Patridge moves the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 3696. Discussion? Is there any objection to the adoption of the dash 8 amendments? Okay, seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 3696 as amended to the floor with a 2-pass recommendation.
Representative Patridge moves the House Bill 3696 as amended to the House floor with a 2-pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there objection? Hearing seen none, so ordered. Do we want to consent? No? Okay.
No, I don't know.
You want to?
Okay.
Representative Lowe? Okay. Let's go to...
I will need help with a speech.
Okay, we will instruct the appropriate people to assist. Very quickly, let's go to House Bill 2488. Representative Lowe?
Yes.
Dash 2s.
Oh, dash 2s. Mr. Chair, I move the dash 2 amendments. This is the right one, sorry. House Bill 2488.
Representative Lowe moves the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2488. Discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing seen none, so ordered. Representative Lowe needs to go to revenue.
Mr. Chair, I move. Are you sure revenue?
Subsequent revenue.
Rats. I'd rather move it to the floor with it too fast, but let's just go ahead and send it to revenue as amended.
Representative Lowe moves House Bill 2488 as amended to the Committee on School Finance and something or other, Revenue Committee, by prior reference. Is there any objection? Hearing seen none, so ordered. Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 608.
Wait a minute.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We appreciate this opportunity. Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I'm Representative Cheryl Walker from House District 51. And since we appeared before you sometime in the last day or so, I'm losing a little track of time as things are moving along very rapidly here. There have been many new proposed amendments that have come out on the Senate Bill 608. And I have briefly reviewed some of those that were here this morning or this afternoon. And in looking at them, I had originally put forth the amendment dash 10. And we have worked with a lot of the parties here through yourself and through others trying to work out a resolution that would accommodate those individuals who wish to have a clause put in called the conscience clause. And in reading the 19th, which I worked with some of the parties this morning, I think that this encompasses those concerns but still would allow for the coverage of contraceptives as would be needed by those individuals who might be working for some of these organizations. And in studying the issue, how it has been dealt with around the country is that some of the perhaps mostly Catholic institutions, although there may be others, they have provided for perhaps third-party management of this kind of coverage. So I think the Dash 19s would be very appropriate to address these issues. For the record, I would like to say that there has, and having been a Catholic at one time, the Catholic Church was one that had been considering, and based on the Bishops' Conference and a report, that they were going to drop their ban on contraceptives back in approximately 1966. That was reversed in 1968, but I think it's important to note that 96% of all Catholic women have used contraceptive methods, and I think it's important that we allow those who wish to do it, abiding by their own conscience, who should be able to do so, as well as those individuals who are not a member of a particular church who opposes contraception should also be able to access contraceptives. And that's all I need to say at this point. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them, and I would defer to Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Diane Rosenbaum, representing House District 14. As Representative Walker has said, we have worked diligently to try to accommodate the concerns that have been expressed and believe that we have come up with a very reasonable version that should be acceptable to everybody. I would just say that many, many people are waiting to see what we do here, or rather what you do here, and I think a lot of people's lives will be affected to the good by a resolution to this, which should accommodate those that are concerned, but also do a great deal of good for many people. So I would urge you to move as expeditiously as possible, and I thank you and the committee members for your work.
Representative Lowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you too for your work. It is a marvel of bipartisan cooperation, and as I look at the history of this bill, I am reminded of a dead whale on a beach. And it takes a lot of people to drag a dead whale up a beach. And I've never seen so many people pulling. And now that we're all in the same direction, this is really marvelous. And on behalf of this woman, I thank you for your hard work on this. As far as the conscience clause compromise goes, I would like to say that I think that it's interesting that different religions in this country have different tenets, and we try to be respectful of all of them, as we should. For example, the marvelous people in the Christian Scientist faith don't particularly believe in medical treatment at all. They believe in medical treatment through prayer. Yet their employees are provided with health insurance, and contravening their own personal beliefs, but that is a good thing for them to do, and I respect them for doing that. And that's kind of a good example for all of us to follow, I think. So,
thank you, Representative Chair Hill. Appreciate that. This has been an opportunity for us to bring an issue forward that I think is about 50 years past due, and it certainly is not a partisan issue. It is a family issue, and I think it's important to our communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 608 in regards to any of the amendments that have been presented? Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bob Castagna, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. The Oregon Catholic Conference is here today supporting the Dash 11, 13, and Dash 18 amendments that you have before you.
Well, hold on a second, Bob. Now, do we have... Yes. Have you done all those? Okay. Let's make sure that we all have whatever is 18.
I'm not sure I've seen all of them.
In the front of your binder.
The Dash 11 amendments, Mr. Chair, are the conscience clause that was before the committee the other day. The Dash 13 amendments I just saw today, but we support that amendment. And the Dash 18 amendments are also before you today, which we support. I just had the opportunity to briefly examine the Dash 19 amendments, and we would oppose those amendments. The language in those amendments, or the language in that amendment, is much too narrow in terms of restricting the entity that qualifies as a religious organization to the sub 1 small I or sub 3 sub I of Internal Revenue Code of that section that's referenced. That would exclude a good number of organizations that are recognized by the Internal Revenue Service as Catholic organizations. It's something that we would find violative of First Amendment rights under the U.S. Constitution, as well as the provisions under the Oregon Constitution, Section 3, Article 1, no law shall in any case whatever control the free exercise and enjoyment of religious opinions or interfere with the rights of conscience. So we cannot support in any way the Dash 19 amendments. And regarding the testimony that preceded my testimony, we have here a very delicate issue of morality as proclaimed by a religious faith tradition. Regardless of what common parlance or public media describe as practices or activities, that is not to be deemed the moral teaching of that religious faith tradition. The religious faith tradition determines what its own teachings are. For government to intrude upon or to examine the faith traditions, we believe, crosses an unconstitutional barrier. And that unconstitutional barrier is the excessive entanglement of state in the affairs of a religious organization. So we would take exception to that extent to the previous testimony.
Okay. Do you have any questions? Thank you very much. Representative Witt, do you wish to testify?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here today to encourage adoption of the Dash 11, the Dash 13, and the Dash 18 amendments to Senate Bill 608. What is consistent with these amendments is that it requires the state to recognize the rights that belong to all Oregonians under Section 3, Article 1, the Constitution of the State of Oregon. And that specifically says, and I've just provided you a copy of that has highlight, it says that no law shall in any case whatever control the free exercise and enjoyment of religious opinions or interfere with the rights of conscience. So, Mr. Chairman, what I ask of the committee is that if this bill is going to go forward, it respects the religious beliefs and practices and the rights of conscience of people that object to the use of contraceptives. And specifically, the Dash 11s, I think, clearly do that. And the Dash 13s and Dash 18s give definition to contraceptive, and also makes clear through the Dash 18s that RU 486 is not a contraceptive. So, Mr. Chairman, the folks, the proponents of this bill, I think certainly are well-intentioned in many ways, and I have no objection with them bringing this bill. I simply ask that they show proper respect and deference to the rights of conscience for people that have a religious belief that is contrary to the use of contraceptives. And these amendments that they're incorporated into the bill, I think, appropriately respect that right.
Are there any questions?
Not the good representative, but I do have a couple of questions, and I might...
Of Representative Witt, or
actually, I'm going to ask a question about church and state, and I'd like to call, if you, with your indulgence, I'd like to call up Mr. Fedanke from the ACLU because I have my specific question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr.
Mr. Fedanke.
Thank Thank you, Chair Hill, members of the committee. This area of the Constitution is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, as Representative Witt quoted to you, the Oregon Bill of Rights guarantees the rights of conscience under Article 1, Sections 2 and 3, and on the other hand, prohibits the government from establishing any religion or religious test in other provisions of Article 1. There is, and this area of the Constitution is has not had a lot of cases under the Oregon, in the Oregon appellate courts, but in general, the Oregon Supreme Court has said that a regulation or a law which applies equally to all institutions can be enforced. The most recent case, which is a Court of Appeals decision, that is currently pending decision in the Oregon Supreme Court. They did accept review, and they are, it has been argued and is awaiting a decision, is an ACLU case that was brought on behalf of a youth minister for the Church of Nazarene who was dismissed from his position, and he filed for unemployment compensation. I'll try to keep this simple, Mr. Chair. Under federal law, states can exempt church employees from the coverage of unemployment compensation statutes. However, under the Oregon Constitution, any such exemption cannot be limited only to churches, but must be available to all religious organizations and institutions. And since the court found that the exemption was not required by federal law, the Court of Appeals held that, in fact, the church was required to cover its religious employees, even a youth minister. They then did a balancing test about whether or not imposing that requirement on the church, and the requirement on the church to come in to the employment division and prove that the person was fired with cause was an undue burden on the free exercise of religion. The Court of Appeals held that it was not an undue burden, that the state had a compelling interest in providing for economic security of all its citizens. In this situation, the state's interest is prevention of discrimination in commerce. And the Dash 19 amendments attempt to limit the exemption to those religious institutions that are core religious activities, as opposed to activities which are affiliated with a church or a religious denomination that are engaged in commerce in society as a whole. So, Ms. Chair, just to sum up, it is not entirely clear at this stage of the development of Oregon constitutional law whether, number one, this committee is required to provide any exemption at all, or number two, if it does so, whether it can limit that exemption to only certain religious organizations that are pervasively religious and not engaged in commerce. So I wish I could give you better direction.
If I could come up with my non-lawyer side of this, I think you just said that we may not be able to put any exemptions, and if we did put an exemption in, we'd have to exempt everybody.
Mr. Chair, that may be the case. Certainly, if you don't include any exemption, those institutions which are constitutionally protected, if any, would still be protected by the Constitution. As a policy matter,
they would have to go to court.
Yes, they would.
$10
case by case.
Case by case.
Yes, they would.
If we are wrong, the courts can tell us we're wrong.
There is a possibility that if you adopt a narrow exception, that it would also apply to broader religious-based organizations.
May I ask a question? I'm ready to ask my question to Mr. Fedenke, and I appreciate you coming forward. 2 days ago when we had a hearing on this in EGOV, and I guess we're upstairs in 357, I'm getting dizzy moving around this building. There was discussion about another case that had been heard in California. And it was the plaintiff was a Catholic Charities, and they had moved for a preliminary injunction on an issue that was on all four squares, identical to that which we are considering today. And there were representations made that the church had won that case. And I have received an abstract of the proceeding. It's an order saying, no, the Catholic Charities motion was denied. And I'm wondering if you had any further information on the background of that case.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, I'm sorry I did not. I had heard the same information, but I don't have any direct knowledge of that case. I am aware that the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission has issued a ruling that maintains that denial of contraceptive coverage violates Title VII of the Federal Civil Rights Act. There is no exception under federal law, but that decision is subject to court review, which has not occurred yet as far as I know.
I would like, Mr. Chair, to make this a part of the record of this hearing. Because just so that it's clear that we're making our decision based upon truthful assertions.
If you could get it to Mark, and Mark, copies made and distributed to all the committee members. Representative Walker, you want to come up, and then Bob will let you come after Representative Walker.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make one final comment. The ACLU's recommendation to the committee is that if you adopt an exemption, that it be a relatively narrow exemption, and that you also require any employers availing themselves of that exemption to notify the insurance division that they have done so, so that this issue can be tracked and reviewed by a later legislative session. But again, we are not convinced that an exception is required by either the federal constitution or the Oregon constitution.
Thank you. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Representative Hill and Representative Lowe. I would like to comment on the Dash 11, 13, and 18 amendments that have been brought forth by Representative Witt. The Dash 11s, which I think we were just beginning to address day before yesterday, the problem with that is that it talks about the religious tenets of a group or entity on whose behalf the insurance policy is issued, when there is no requirement that that group or entity actually, in fact, be a tax-exempt religious organization. Anyone could declare that they have religious tenets that would not that would actually preclude them from the requirement of having to have this kind of coverage. So that one is so broad as to be unworkable. The Dash 13 amendments is an attempt to define contraceptives, and in fact this limits it to synthetic female hormones that contain the two synthetic products, estrogen and progestin. Many contraceptives contain not both of those, not in the synthetic form. There may be other kinds of oral contraceptives. and taken daily. We are developing other drugs all the time, improving on the products that may not be taken daily. And then it defines a device as in regards to oral in addition to oral contraceptives as vaginal diaphragms. There are other barrier devices that are not vaginal diaphragms, and there are many other products that are used for contraception that do not fall in either one of these categories. And to deny individuals the opportunity to use whatever is medically appropriate for them is denying them the appropriate medical care that they are entitled to. So this one, and this also, I believe, is reaching beyond the scope of what we're trying to do here. In other words, provide coverage or insurance for contraceptives. We do not need to go into defining what those contraceptives are. They need to be defined by the medical practitioner and the person who is using them. And the Dash 18 also goes beyond the scope of this bill. It goes into the drugs that are all commonly known as RU486. We are not dealing with abortifacients in this bill. We're dealing with contraceptives. So I think this one also goes beyond what we're trying to do with providing insurance coverage for contraceptives, which is a medical decision between a woman and her doctor.
Thank you, Representative. Bob, quickly.
Mr. Chair, again for the record, Bob Castagna, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. First, to the comments previously made regarding the litigation in California, I previously testified that it was my understanding that the church had prevailed in California. I spoke to the attorney in that case. What I was recollecting was the latest action in that case, not the initial trial court decision. The initial trial court decision was in favor of the state of California, but this is what I have from the United States Catholic Conference Office of General Counsel. The California case, in which Catholic Charities of Sacramento sued the state of California over being included in a contraceptive coverage law, raises a host of constitutional issues, including free exercise claims, and a writ of mandamus in that case has been issued. The writ of mandamus has been issued because the trial court judge denied the preliminary injunction. The oral arguments on that writ of mandamus have been scheduled for June the 22nd. That was the latest thing in my mind at the time I made the representations at the previous hearing. There was no intent to mislead this committee or to provide incorrect or unfactual information. Regarding the EEOC ruling, which is being interpreted in some cases as being this national mandate that employers have to provide contraceptive coverage if they provide a prescription health care benefit, that is not the interpretation of other lawyers observing that case. Other lawyers interpreted in this manner. That matter, the EEOC decision, was decided in a single adjudication, not in rulemaking. Therefore, it is binding only on the parties to that case. So it is a limited case. It is not adopted by rule. It does not constitute a mandate from EEOC to employers or to state legislatures to adopt this type of legislation. Further, regarding the Dash B-19 amendments, I spoke to the limited nature of the application to religious organizations that are contained in the Dash B-19 amendments referencing Internal Revenue Code. There are additional objective elements to the Dash 19 amendments. Number one, that the group or entity that invokes the religious exemption provided under subsection 4 of this section shall provide written notice of the religious exemption and the basis of the exemption to its employees prior to the issuance or renewal of the policy, and provide written information to its employees describing how an employee may directly purchase coverage for services and contraceptives described in subsection 2 of this section from the insurer issuing the policy. Not only does the language...
Can you get us a couple of good copies?
Yeah, that's the B-19 amendments that you have before you. Not only does it impinge upon freedom of religion and the free exercise thereof and rights under the Oregon Constitution, it further impinges on the free speech rights of the entity in that they are required to speak in a certain manner. And not only are they required to speak in a certain manner, they are required to provide written information describing how an employee may purchase directly coverage for services and contraceptives, which may be in violation of the moral teaching of that religious entity. So you place the religious organization then in a morally complicit situation, giving information as to how its employees may violate the moral code which it teaches. That appears to be unconstitutional on its face. What we are urging here is a respect for the rights of conscience so that neither an employer nor a religious organization must litigate to have its constitutional rights vindicated. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob. Representative Nolan, do you have a desire?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo, did you have a desire to come up and testify?
Mr. Chair, just Diane Rosenbaum again, just a final comment. I was just before the hearing provided, so I only have one copy of it, a decision from, again, the California case. This is Judge Gray, and this does relate specifically to the Dash 18 amendments that have been talked about. And in that case, the issue was raised about RU 486 and other devices or substances, and what the court ruled in that case when they considered it was not necessary to specify those substances because they did not fall within the definition of contraceptives. They were in a different category, and that is why we have not attempted to enumerate what contraceptives are, and I don't think it's necessary to do so. I also want to point out something that appears to be developing as a national trend because from another document that was just provided to me, there was apparently in Connecticut a challenge on a similar basis to what we're hearing today, basically a conscience clause in their bill that was a narrowly drawn one, and the argument was made that that was unacceptable because it didn't include all employers who might want to opt out on the basis of conscience. And I think, you know, the problem here is if we're simply in a disagreement about how broad this needs to be, we will never be able to agree. To us, it's really a basic health care need that we're talking about. It's not a religious issue. We are not the ones who brought religion into this debate, and here it is. And so I think at some point, you know, we simply have to agree to disagree about this and move ahead. And that's what I think we're at that point.
Thank you very much, Senator Castillo.
Thank you, Chair Hill and members of the committee. Susan Castillo, State Senator from District 20, Eugene. First of all, thank you very much for this opportunity to talk about this very important public health bill for the women of the state of Oregon. I can't tell you how strongly this legislation is supported across this state by the women of this state. We know that there are 20 other states, I believe it's 20 other states, who have similar legislation now. Last year, it was the state of Iowa that passed a bill on contraceptives coverage. The year before that, Georgia and other states, as more and more women across the country are pushing for this legislation, and we know there's an effort at the federal level as well. The issue before you, I know, is the conscience clause, and I just urge you to please adopt a very moderate amendment to this. And you know, nowhere in our legislation does it say that anybody has to take contraceptives, and we know that we have to be respectful of everyone's religious beliefs. We believe the bill as is, it does that. In no way does it tell anyone that they have to engage in practicing birth control. And would urge you to move this to the Senate floor with something very narrowly crafted as an amendment, and let's make this happen for the women of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Hill.
Thank you. Gail?
Hi, thank you very much, committee and committee chairman Hill. My name is Gail Atterbury. I'm the director of Oregon Right to Life, and I would like to come today in support of the amendments 11, 13, and 18. The reason for 13 is because of the bill as it is originally written is broad enough that it would cover abortifacients, and we are very concerned about that as Oregon Right to Life. So that is why we have the 13, so it will narrowly define the type of contraceptives which are not abortifacients. And then we strongly support the conscience clause because as Oregon Right to Life, as an employer, we would be forced under the current bill, as Oregon Right to Life, who is fighting abortion, to provide contraceptives which are abortifacients to our insurance coverage that would be supportive of contraceptives that would actually be abortifacients. You look very puzzled.
Well, I'm trying to understand in terms
that's
of...
That's why I like the conscience clause.
You know, the contraceptive is a contraceptive, which, if I understand
that's correct.
The definition, it's not...
I know, that's very confusing.
So I'm just curious in terms of... Because I know as I've talked to you many times before, is that I thought Organized to Life didn't have a position on contraception, and it wasn't your failure.
That is absolutely correct, Representative Hill. We do not have any position on contraceptives. Which is a contraceptive? The definition of complete would stop the egg and the sperm from uniting. However, this relies on the FDA's definition of contraceptive, which relies upon their definition of pregnancy. Their definition of pregnancy starts at implantation.
Where is that at, Miguel?
It's talking about the FDA, it's relying upon the FDA version of contraceptive.
Yeah. Where is that at?
In there? No?
In the bill?
In the bill?
But I'm trying to understand in terms of there's something 608.
Mm-hmm. Okay, will you please step? Okay. Okay, section 12. Thank you. Why did you say right there? In section 12.
Are we looking at the dash what?
Or the
this is the original bill.
Minority report being addressed.
In the FDA, the definition of pregnancy, pregnancy starts at implantation, according to the FDA, and that is 9 to 10 days after conception, and human life begins at conception.
Well, I mean, I would argue your interpretation of that, it says, it's talking about medical drugs for the prevention of conception.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to conveniently lose the last sentence, words of that sentence.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very leery, whether depending upon the FDA for prevention of pregnancy.
Well,
and that's...
That doesn't sound what it says.
Okay.
Talking about drugs that are approved by the FDA, which are the only drugs, you know, that would fall under a formulary that, or a prescription plan. So I'm just, I mean, it doesn't do what you...
I think we probably have a little difference of opinion on that, but that's where we're coming from. And that is why I support that.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else who would like to join?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield, Oregon. Mr. Chairman, I just do not want to get in the middle of this.
And goodbye, John.
John, let me share with you. I have had the opportunity to discuss this with my mother, and it's something I never thought I would have to discuss with my mother. And so, welcome to the debate.
Mr. Chairman, I simply wanted to state for the record two things. Number one, somewhere buried in reams of amendments is Senate Bill 608, which is a very good bill. It really is. But notwithstanding that, on the Dash 19 amendments, I simply wanted to state for the record that I would like to work with the proponents to deal with the language that requires insurers to basically sell on an individual basis contraceptive coverage in a group plan, and to rate it in such a way as to basically subsidize that coverage. So as this bill moves forward, I simply want it on the record that we would have some concerns about that, more so from the administrative point of view than from the rating point of view, because it would be very difficult in claims processing to deal with a group where different individuals basically have different coverages. So we'll be working with those people.
Okay.
And with that, I do not want to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Love.
Could you please urge Mr. Powell to work with those people like now?
Well, I will get to the time frames here on this.
Great.
Is there anyone else who would like an opportunity to testify? Welcome.
Representative Hill, members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly. I'm the lobbyist for the Women's Rights Coalition. I was not prepared to testify. It was just a work session. The Women's Rights Coalition is a coalition of the American Association of University Women of Oregon, the Oregon Women's Political Caucus, the YWCA, the Older Women's League, the National Organization of Women, and Delta Kappa Gamma. As an example, the American Association of University Women has 31 branches in the state and 2,000 members. we are strongly in favor of the Dash 19 amendment and whatever can be worked out. If there is a slight problem, we think it's way past time that women's contraceptive needs are covered in prescription drugs. And we will make sure that we are as careful with protecting people's personal rights of choices as possible, but it's way past time for this to happen.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Is there any questions? Thank you very much. We are not going to move the bill out today. Plan on your schedules tomorrow pending the speaker's announcement of the House going to the one-hour rule. This bill will be, meeting at 2 o'clock tomorrow, pending that announcement. The speaker says he's going to make that announcement at noon tomorrow. So pencil in. We'll go to work session on Senate Bill 608 tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We will not be taking any more testimony. We will go into work session. So this is your last opportunity. Is there anyone who would like to testify on Senate Bill 608 that has not had an opportunity? And seeing none, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 608.
So what did Mom say?
Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 765. Representative Lowe, 765.
Oh, where are we sending it?
Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send whatever you said to wherever you said. 765 Ways and Means.
With a recommendation? Representative Lowe moves Senate Bill 765 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Mm-hmm. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 273. Don?
Chairman Hill, Representative Lowe, for the record, my name is Donald Kramer, Jr. I am an attorney, partner at Black Helderline, also Special Assistant Attorney General for the Oregon Research and Development Account. Here today as a citizen of the state of Oregon, cares a lot about entrepreneurship, higher ed, and economic development policy. Representative Hill, you have before you, and I apologize because we put this together quickly. I actually jotted these out this morning. Some amendments. Literally, I've not been down here before to sort of testify on this. And real briefly, let me walk through my thoughts on this. One is we are just not trying to create another body here. Literally, during the last session, as you know, Representative Hill, I was very much involved with the Governor's Joint Board's Working Group that produced several pieces of key legislation that we are taking a look at this session, as well as attended the Oregon Internet Commission meetings. Literally, what I've tried to do is, I think, really take another look at this bill and actually try to position a little bit more after the Internet Commission that I think worked very effectively. In terms of changes, we can sort of go through those specifically if you like, but I think recommending that we expand this body to 15 members, I know that's a large member, but that's the same number that the Internet Commission had. I think to have two members of the Senate and two members of the House will help in terms of moving legislation through when we sort of convene again in 2003. The state treasurer would serve as a member of this, and I've added some language that, in addition to the key parties here, which I think is higher ed, economic development, State Board of Education, and the independent colleges in Oregon Health Sciences, that we actually get sort of five members that have sort of experience with technology and or venture or angel capital experience. And I think literally, I see this and as being sort of a real catalyst to sort of bring some change about. And I would tell you, Representative Hill, and we've known each other for a long time, that I'm willing to personally sort of put my time and involvement in this effort so this does not become another entity that sort of just produces a report, but actually an action-oriented change catalyst With that, I'm more than happy to answer questions or go through with some specificity the changes that we're suggesting.
We'll bring this back. Let's get them drafted, and then invite you back at that point. And I think that way we can have a conversation going forward. One big thing is we need to make sure that everything has to be to the legislature by December 31st. Nothing can show up in March, no matter how well-intentioned. If it's going to get anywhere in the session, it has to be done pre-session, filed, and all the reports, and so there's time to work it.
We'll get that provision.
That's a big issue.
Who should we work with, Representative Hill, in terms of getting those changes? Okay, we'll talk to her.
Mr. Chairman, probably December 31st is too late.
I think the language that I'm suggesting came out of the Internet Commission bill. It's actually the deadline for pre-session filing, and we've sort of referred to sort of the statutory reference as opposed to the December 8th.
The Internet Commission, we sunsetted December 31st, so they had to be done completely before the session began.
Okay.
So that it ended, and there wasn't an opportunity to expand it on. Okay. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 273. We're not going to get time to get to 2659 today. I apologize. Is there anybody that's out of town that has come in for that? Let me open a work session on 2659. If you want to come up, say your piece very quickly. We've got floor session at 3:30, and then we have to be on another committee. Can you come back? Okay. I just don't want to inconvenience if someone has come and can't make it back. So with that, then we'll close the work session on House Bill 2659. And without objection, we will stand adjourned.
Until tomorrow.